Good evening, everybody. So I'm going to pick up on some threads tonight from Tenny's talks and from other things that we've been talking about on this retreat. And I'm especially going to be riffing on Baijiang's Fox koan. In particular, it's such a big koan, I'm going to be paying mostly attention to the 500 lives as a fox, since we're in them. So here's the koan. Once, when Baijiang gave a series of talks, a certain old man was always there listening with the students. When they left, he'd leave too. One day, however, he remained behind. Baijiang asked him, "Who are you?" The old man replied, "I'm not a human being. In the far distant past, in the time of Kashyapa Buddha, I was the head priest of this mountain. One day, a student asked me, 'Does an enlightened person fall under the law of cause and effect?' I replied, 'A person like that does not fall under the law of cause and effect.' With that, I was reborn 500 times as a fox. Please, say a turning word for me and release me from my wild fox body." He then asked Baijiang, "Does an enlightened person fall under the law of cause and effect?" Baijiang said, "Such a person doesn't cut the chain of cause and effect." Hearing this, the old man was himself enlightened. Making his bows, he said, "I've been released from my fox body. It's on the other side of this mountain, and I'd like to make a request of you. Please, perform my funeral as you would for a priest." Baijiang had the monk on duty strike the signal board and inform the assembly that after the noon meal there would be a funeral for a priest. The students talked about this in surprise. "All of us are healthy. There's no one in the morgue. What's this all about?" After the meal, Baijiang led the students to the foot of a rock on the far side of the mountain. There he used his staff to poke out the corpse of a dead fox. He then performed a cremation ceremony for it. At the evening teaching, Baijiang told the whole story to the assembly. Wang Bo stepped forward and said, "As you say, the old man missed the turning word and was reborn as a fox 500 times. What if he had given the right answer each time he was asked the question? What would have happened then?" Baijiang said, "Come closer and I'll tell you." Wang Bo went up to Baijiang and slapped him in the face. Baijiang clapped his hands and laughed, saying, "I thought the barbarian had a red beard, but right here is a red-bearded barbarian." So I think Tenny's rubbing off on me. As I was working on my Dharma talk, I found myself titling the sections. I know. So part one, the relative and the absolute. This koan turns on the relationship between the absolute and the relative, as Tenny was talking about last night. In the terms of the koan, we are all, without exception, karma-bound beings. So our perspective is always colored by our conditioning, and our actions are always a bit wobbly. And on the other hand, we are all Buddha, all perfect, just as we are. animated by and coextensive with the Absolute. Our human situation is about how do we live in this rub? How do we navigate this life with a little more peace and a little less separation and suffering? So that's kind of the trick of our practice, to be ourselves just as we are, just as our karma has shaped us. Still crazy after all these years. And at the same time, to know that we are really Buddha and to actually allow ourselves to really be Buddha, to manifest that side of our lives at the very same time. And that doesn't mean striving to perfect ourselves into Buddha, but Buddha just as our very ordinary selves. There isn't any other Buddha. There's no more perfect Buddha. So this koan takes up this conundrum. The Baizhang of the olden days was asked a question about karma, an aspect of the relative human world. Is the enlightened person still in the relative world or not? The classical answer from the old texts is the answer he gives, that the enlightened person is free from the impact of karma. A Buddha is beyond the relative world. It's the traditional, old school, right answer, that a Buddha is not touched by karma. That's what makes him a Buddha. But apparently he missed something, and he was born 500 lives as a fox. And so now he comes into the present day Baizhang, the abbot of the monastery, to see if, as the old man, to see if he can find some kind of liberation. And Baizhang says, the enlightened person is subject to cause and effect. So he embraces the relative world. He doesn't try to escape it. And with that, the old monk is liberated. Part two. Ancient twisted karma. So in one reading of the story, it's a bad thing to be born as a wild fox. In the sort of symbolic world of ancient China, I hear that a wild fox was kind of an unlucky creature, kind of maybe like a black cat. So in this version of the story, perhaps Baizhang made a mistake, and he suffers as a result of that mistake. In doing work in the room, I know that there are some people suffering here. And I know that we all bring our suffering to retreat. Sometimes it's regret about the past, a mistake. And sometimes it's the disappointments of the world, the strain of having a human body. To come on retreat means being willing to face all that. I imagine in this version of the story how hard it must have been for that old Baizhang to endure those 500 lives as a fox. Perhaps he suffered a lot. Maybe he spent time in confusion or feeling bad about himself thinking about his mistake. Maybe he was angry at the world for his fox lives. Maybe it took him all of those 500 fox lives to work through this karma and to get to the place where he could finally come into the body of the old man so that he could meet the new Baijiang, who I guess is really his future self, and ask for help. So it seems to me like in this version of the story, there are a couple of important points here. That part of the process of finding freedom involves suffering through karma. This is the suffering that is a kind of a purification, maybe the purification that we open our sutra service with, hard though it may be. Generally, we would rather avoid it, or we can tell a story that it's an obstacle to our real practice. I wish I could stop feeling so stuck, or so sad, or so unworthy, so that I could find peace. But to avoid it would be a big mistake. To be fully ourselves is to take responsibility for our suffering, to suffer our suffering. And in a way, for all suffering. And there's a lot of sorrow and grief in that. Perhaps you've tasted that. Sometimes we swim in an ocean of tears and retreat. But we can hold that together in the field of our practice as a sacred practice, not a prelude to the real thing. That is the real thing. And a second point in this version of the story is that the old man's liberation happens in the context of a relationship. Baijiang, the fox, needed to get to the point where he could reach out and say, "Please help me. Here is my plight. Here's where I'm stuck." That's a sacred moment. It's like those other moments in the koans where someone says, "I am alone and destitute. Please give me alms." Or, "I'm pecking from the inside. Can you please peck from the outside? Help. Help." So let's get down to nuts and bolts. How do we work through our ancient twisted karma? Retreat is a pretty darn good place for this, since we have lots of time and not too many distractions, and a safe and clear container. So we just let ourselves feel things all the way through. The grief, the fear, the anger, the joy. Lean towards it, lean into it. Feel it in your body. You may feel it as a kind of energetic constriction or pain. Stay with it in a kind, and curious way, and in detail. I often think to myself when I'm here, if I were a painter and I were going to paint this experience, what would it look like? What would it be like? Move towards it rather than bracing against it. And because this can be pretty intense, I find myself that it's helpful to intersperse this movement towards with a kind of relaxing out, a taking in of the world, of being receptive, hearing the bird song, feeling the wind on your skin, hearing your neighbor's breathing. So you might try this movement from feeling your karmic body to releasing into the feeling of being held and carried and fetched by the world. So there's a sort of movement to it, back and forth. And then you can just notice the stories that you attach to your suffering. Your stories about right and wrong, good and bad, stuck and free, awakened and unworthy. Just notice and see the suffering that those stories tend to create. So can you unhook the story and stay in the feeling? That is a noble path. And that is a way of working, sitting with, practicing with our ancient twisted karma. And surely and slowly, things can change. And as Lonnie said last night, every once in a while there are these moments of freedom, of grace, you know, where the scales fall from our eyes. A moment where all the suffering just drops away of its own. As we chant in Hakuin Ikkaku's praise song for meditation, in this moment, all your crimes are wiped away, all your karma was wiped away. Then where are all those heavens and hells? The gate opens. Cause and effect are one. There's no two, no three. The formless form comes into form. Going and coming, we are in the right place. Thinking thoughts without thought. Singing and dancing are the voice of the way. So these moments, we have these moments, we all have these glimpses, and they start to collect, you know, and they start to feel as real as the world of entangling karma. And we begin to put the heart mind to rest. We can't obliterate karma. Maybe we can't even completely set it to rest. But we can rest inside of it. And we can find the freedom that's already there. Part three. Wild fox love and wild fox rub. So now I'll tell a different story about old Bai Zhang's 500 lives as a fox. This story maybe leans a little more on the perspective of the absolute. In this version, the old monk didn't answer the question incorrectly, and the lives of a fox were not a punishment, or even unfortunate, but rather they were joyfully foxy. I enjoy this version of the story because I get to live into those fox lives. like the poem Tenney shared about the cat walking step by step over the jam cabinet and into the flower pot. The fox moves through the bushes, her body taut and alert. She hunts for prey, savoring a juicy mouse. She mates and she nurtures her young. In other words, she is just fully living her fox lives, just like we are fully living our human lives, karma and all. A fox is, I think, free of those models we were talking about last night. She simply lives in the weaving and unweaving of things. Her life is particular, you know, an unsuccessful day of hunting leads to hunger pains. And yet there is a harmonious interplay with the landscape and the climate and the earth and all the other beings around her. So in this admittedly perhaps romantic version, the fox lives in an unimpeded brocade where each particularity, besides being itself, penetrates all other particularities and is in turn penetrated by them. This harmonious interplay between the particularities and also with the universal creates a luminous universe, free of the limits of time and space, and yet also exactly the world of our daily affairs. The boundaries of each particular fox life melt away, and the reality of each becomes infinitely interfused with every other being. So for you Dharma geeks, this is the vision of the Wayam school of Zen, especially as spelled out in the Avatamsaka Sutra. And what we're most familiar with here is the image of Indra's net, which is an infinite net spread in all directions of the universe with no beginning and no end. And at each node of the net, there's a jewel. And every jewel reflects every other jewel. No jewel exists by itself independently of the rest. Everything is just related to everything else. Nothing is isolated. In fact, there are no jewels. There is no net. Just the connections between them that make the shimmer into and out of existence. So this is a profoundly inclusive vision of reality, full of eros, constituted by radiant union and interpenetration of the vastness, and by each other, with nothing and no one left out. And I want to linger for a minute here on the eros of our fox lives. And by this I mean the feeling of aliveness, of fullness, of beauty and sensuality and generativity. Freud talked about eros as the drive towards life, towards creation, through juiciness and also messiness. I was walking along the wash this afternoon and I was stopped in my tracks. Oh my gosh, the orange, the pink, gobsmacked. Blam! in Zen, we sometimes talk about this eros as intimacy, a feel for our intimate connections with each other, with life. And that's maybe a little bit more of a quiet flavor of eros. But sometimes it is blam, you know, and every pore and tendon vibrates. Our body is electric with the fullness of it all. The cardinal, the lupine, that's you. I feel it in the spring energy around here, the spring mood itself. The sap is rising. The growth is unfurling. The exuberant dance of Eros is on full display. And yet, Eros is not always bliss and beauty. Sometimes it feels more like the rushing water, active and exciting, but also with some danger and some friction. When we are actually engaged with each other, when we are in the hubbub of life with each other, we can rub each other the wrong way. We can get hurt. And we can be afraid that we have hurt others. This is part of the nature of it too. It's not a mistake. The psychoanalyst and artist Marion Milner wrote about the fire of Eros, the way that this erotic energy has a passionate aspect that doesn't always feel easy. She emphasized the importance of interweaving, and she envisioned a quality of Eros that is fiery, possessing a tremendous energy to break down boundaries and separations. The fire of Eros, in her version, also has a destructive aspect, and that this is actually essential for the creative process. Old structures are melted down. Who we think we are gets burned away. They are burned up in a passionate, erotic conflagration. It's the fire of transformation. And this suggests a mode of change that is not gradual. In the fire of Eros, boundaries are dismantled, and perhaps union can be experienced. Marion Milner suggested that the experiences of immersion in this primary unity, what we might call the absolute, offers an opportunity then for creative redifferentiation. When we melt ourselves down, we can become something new. From an experience of the dismantled self can come a new and previously impossible version of the self. This process involves upheaval, upset, a lot of rock in the boat. So in other words, if we're not rubbing up against each other, we're not truly engaged. Milner also said that there's an ongoing pulsation between what she calls differentiation, maybe we could call it the relative, and what she called de-differentiation, the absolute. And this pulsation perhaps is something like what Joan called shimmer. Each giving rise to the other and destroying the other in a fundamental human and cosmic rhythm. She talked about the oscillation between the illusion of union and the fact of contact. which is another way of describing the discovery of an interface, a boundary, a place of contact. Milner shows us how our sense of separateness and connectedness arise together and create each other. It's important that we're able to tolerate and cultivate both difference and union, as Tenney was talking about last night, that each thing stands in its own place and each thing is interwoven. And to play with this, with the way that the shimmer slides. This is the challenge and the creativity of the artist, the meditator, the human, to foray into radical states of continuity, and to be able to integrate and interpenetrate this experience with our everyday modes of differentiated experience. And a prerequisite is to be able to tolerate the rub, the points of contact that come with deep engagement. The Kyosaku on the altar here says, this fire runs through all things. In one turn of the kaleidoscope, the fire of Eros runs through all things, connects all things. So perhaps we could say in the style of Lin Chi, followers of the way, you here listening to this Dharma talk, the fire of Eros, the energy of interpenetration blazes clearly within you, enlivens you, and frees you. So just as there are times when we do ancient, twisted karma, fox practice, there are other times when we can practice beauty and sensuality and pleasure, and also friction and rub in our fox lives, as an expression of the interpenetration of each thing, of the vibrancy of it all, and our ability to rise and fall and flow with all of it. Women's verse for the koan is, not falling, not evading, two faces of the same die, not evading, not falling, 1,000 mistakes, 10,000 mistakes. So that leads me to just a brief final section on refuge. I want to venture just a tiny way from the territory of the fox into the realm of refuge from the perspective of our wild fox lives. On the one hand, from the point of view of the relative, the precepts are really helpful guidance for creating less harmful karma for ourselves and for others. Sometimes this has actually for me, a kind of a sharp quality that's helpful. Kind of like, you know, when we need to say to a toddler, you know, don't stick your finger in the light socket. I'll remind myself, don't lie. Don't steal. I know that it's tempting, but it might create more suffering. And then there's the project of really exploring our karma, as Bai Zhang needed to do in the first version of the story, 500 Lives as a Fox, 500 Retreats, 500 Years, 500 Lifetimes. We learn to see our patterns, soften our reactions, and see others as ourselves. And on the other hand, from this perspective that includes the absolute, the precepts are simply a description of what it might look like to live inside the harmonious interplay between all things in the interweaving. when we truly feel the truth of our interdependence, it only makes sense to cultivate care, tenderness, and respect towards all those we encounter, including ourselves. Perhaps Lin Chi points our way in the reading from this afternoon when he says, just get so you can follow along with circumstances and use up your old karma. When the time comes to do so, put on your clothes. You want to walk, walk. If you want to sit, sit. But never for a moment set your mind on seeing Buddhahood. Why? A person of old said, if you try to create good karma and seek to be a Buddha, then Buddha will become a sure sign you will remain in the realm of birth and death. So Lin Chi says, just act ordinary. We don't need to try to be good. We simply stay open to a larger view, the perspective of our interwovenness. We just walk in the brightness that's right here, already here, already you, your own heart mind, just as it is. Thank you, and happy to hear any thoughts.
I don't quite how to say this, but thank you for expanding my knowledge, feeling, my precepts. I feel like I've got to go back and rewrite.
Again.
I'm in a room full of insects. I don't know that these specific insects only live like 14 hours, but a lot of them do. Can't help but wonder about the karma.
Wild bug lives. Thank you.
And then there's a fox. The foxes probably wouldn't be that bad to be a fox. Maybe those old Chinese foxes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's enough for me. Thank you.
I don't know what this has actually to do with any of it, but the experience, I was in our bathroom, very small house, and there was this insect, thank you, and I believe it was what Sasa calls a mosquito hawk.
Mm-hmm.
They're good.
Yeah.
Don't kill it. So I didn't kill it. And I said hello. And I do that occasionally. And then I had coffee on the sink. And I picked it up. And I should say, include on this, I've been sewing my raksa. And there's thousands of little pieces of blue thread all over the house. And I picked up the cup and I started drinking it. How did the blue thread get in my coffee? It wasn't blue thread.
Oh.
It was the hawk.
No.
It was like,
there's the interweaving.
Where is the karma? Where's the karma? Where's the comedy? And where's the karma in that? Though?
Uh-huh.
It's
the comedy.
Yeah.
There's so, so many questions.
Yeah.
And it's like trying to put the fire out across the river.
as fire burns thing through all things. Yeah, a lot of mystery.
I'm thinking about Foxy Lives, and I love the twist in the kaleidoscope that you gave us, you know, to go from it being the result of something done badly or poorly or whatever, you know, to think of it, to just shift it and see it in a completely different way, and maybe all of it is the same. But it's very expanding to be able to see the foxiness of the fox lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Something can just bust completely open. Yeah. What a relief. Yeah.
I think the reason that we think the fox lives are bad is because they're more limited than human lives. But human lives are also limited. And so, you know, why not be, you know, that it's equal to have a to be a fox or an octopus or a redwood tree or you know, it doesn't have to be, how can there really be a measurement?
Exactly.
How good things are, how okay things are.
That's exactly right. And the from the perspective of the absolute, no difference, right? No better, no worse, no more or less limited. Yeah.
Which is why the ancestors took reverent care of all beings.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that it's all us, you know. No difference. Yeah.
I was lamenting my fox life to Tandy this afternoon, and I came back into the hall, and was just, you know, sort of, I felt like, you know, a little lighter, and I was just sitting here, and the cardinal was outside the door, or outside the window, just singing his heart out, and I just, all of a sudden, I noticed that my body was going with the singing, it was moving with it, and I was like, oh, that's that thing down under, you know,
so,
I was just, it was just really cool. It was that other side, you know, that just came up and fetched me.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah. The wild cardinal is being reborn as you.
Yeah. And I was out there singing.
Yes.
You know, I guess the part that keeps intriguing me is the very end of the poem with the staff and how the new abbot brings the staff and searches out the carcass of the fox. And there seems to be some kind of magical, you know, conversation there between the bones and the staff.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the question is, what relationship is that? That we have, or the teachers have to us, or we have to teachers. What is that? That's it.
That's a lovely question. Yeah. And that just after that, there's a cremation. You know, I think of the fire. Something is destroyed, you know, so that something else can be created, I think.
Well, many times in work of the room, a teacher was very kindly to point out the snake skin that's just lying there on the floor. You know, this is kind of like,
yeah.
Well, you know, you might.
Exactly.
Just the one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you said that, one thing that occurred to me is it's not clear who's receiving the benefit in that moment, which is a lot of times what work in the room feels like. You know, it's like it's so great for the Bajang to, you know, it's such a beautiful thing that he's finding.
Very tactful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
which Bajang is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the thing that gets me, is that I feel like the koan is just me turning around and facing my own karma.
Yeah.
I don't really know what order these things happened in, whether I came upon the koan or I had the dream first, but I had a dream of, a really frightening dream of being chased. Like, I thought I was about to be attacked or raped or, you know. Some guy was chasing me in the city, and it suddenly occurred to me that I could turn around and look at him. And when I turned around and looked at him, it was almost like he went poof. He just tried to make a scary face. It was just a guy who tried to make a really scary face. It was ridiculous. You know, it was like the Joker.
Yeah.
You know, Batman. It was just like, ew! and so, it didn't occur to me in the dream, but when I woke up, I was like, oh, this is just turning around and embracing the karma that I'm trying to run away from.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so I love that not only that it's, they're both Beijing.
Yeah.
But that Beijing is the place.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Beijing Mountain. Yeah.
Yeah.
The practice of a lifetime.
Yeah.
Turning around and looking.
It's really something that came from studying dream yoga with Joan,
yeah,
to start and turn and face the scary things in dreams,
right,
and find out, oh, there's the Dharma.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Not the obstacle, the way.
Yeah.
Teddy, is there anything you want
to say? Yeah, one thing I wanted to say, yeah, thank you, is I want to talk about how great it was that you divided it into sections. since you did that, like you set it up as this one story and then there's this other story, right?
Yeah.
And then as soon as you get to differentiation and then you're psychoanalyst, right?
Uh-huh.
It's pretty clear that the sort of non-karmic version,
uh-huh,
like, has got karma right inside it.
Yeah.
And so they loop back into one another, which is really gorgeous. You know, it was sort of very striking to me. So since it was like, oh, here's one picture, here's the other picture, but wait, I'm back in the first picture again.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. So it's really lovely. And that's a very deep part of the koan, I think.
Yeah,
right? You know,
right,
just how inextricable those two are.
Right.
Yeah, so thank you.
You know, it's funny, as you were saying that, I was thinking of the, remember those ice cream cones where they swirl the two flavors into one?
Yeah.
And you go in and you're like, that's chocolate, that's vanilla, that's chocolate. It's like that. Yeah. Yeah, Lonnie.
I had the same kind of feeling about cause and effect in the stories, because it seemed like the cause was the effect and the effect was the cause, mm-hmm, and then they weren't neither one of them existed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I kept thinking, what's the cause and what's the effect? Is the cause the wrong answer and the effect is becoming a fox, and except it wasn't the wrong answer and it wasn't a fox, and all of a sudden cause and effect seemed to kind of evaporate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and then we're just walking on the empty sky.
Yeah.
And both things are completely true and completely real. Yeah. Thank you all.
Thank you.